Good morning and happy, beautiful Tuesday to all my friends who are listening. Thank you for spending your Tuesday morning with us. It's time for The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. Good morning, Mike.
Well, good morning to you.
What a beautiful, beautiful day.
Unbelievable. And I was sitting here watching the long-range forecast in about 5 or 6 days out while we were waiting to come on the air. And yeah, it is going to be gorgeous.
I mean, this is why we live here.
Days. We're talking about mid-70s.
Yeah.
Dry. It is just going to be absolutely gorgeous.
Perfect gardening weather.
Perfect gardening weather. However, you know, not we like to stay positive.
Don't rain on our parade here, Mike.
Well, I know, but we have to be very realistic in that we are only in the early middle of March. We still could have some cold weather. We could still have frost. We could still have a freeze. And so many of the things. We talked about this last week, about that great article written by one of the extension agents over in Fort Walton, saying the big question was, is it winter or is it spring?
Right.
Well, I think the first day, official day of spring is a week. Was it next week, I think? Anyway.
The 21st?
Very soon. Very soon. And we want to get out and do all kind of stuff. We want to prune back all those damaged shrubs. We want to plant some beautiful hibiscus and mandevilla and crotons. We want to do all of that and put our annuals. Oh, you can't. You just can't do that yet.
Oh, okay.
Because
pause.
If you do,
yes.
You could be successful. And, man, I hope you are. But you're really rolling the dice that putting some of these tender plants out or pruning a little too early could, as we go into spring, be a little problematic. So just kind of, as we've talked about on The Garden Line, do some planning, decide what you're going to do, get all your beds ready, get all your pots ready and your soil, and go buy all the stuff that you need, hardware wise if you will, and get ready to go. But maybe a couple of weeks before we really make our big move might be the thing to do.
Yes. And if you have any questions you want to call in, please feel free. If you want to text, as long as you're not driving, please be safe out there. 437-1620-850-437-1620. We already have a question. Look at that. We took a breath and there it is. Well, first of all, I want to say good morning to Paul with Blue Sky Landscaping. I see your truck around town. So hi, Paul. It's good to have you. And also we have another listener, Miss Tracy. She would like to know, when would you think is a good go ahead to get daylily bulbs into the ground?
Well, I think you could plant daylilies now.
Right.
Daylilies are one of the best perennials in Pensacola. They are great. As a matter of fact, as we get into back in the November, December days, was a great time to separate daylilies. A lot of people, believe it or not, they'll separate them, and then you have one nice plant, then you have another one. They'll give it as a gift. They'll give it to their neighbor and say, you know, this is one that you really enjoyed looking at. Here,
oh,
here's
absolutely
one for you. So, yes. Oh, no. Planting daylilies right now would be just fine.
It's
a great perennial, and, you know, I always couple that. They're not kin to each other, but Gerber daisies are kind of the same way. They're a great perennial. And, you know, maybe as the show moves on, we can talk about some other options.
Sure.
But those two are just really will do well in Pensacola. They're great plants.
Awesome. Okay. Well, we are just on fire today. I promise you we will get to your texts, your questions. But first, we have a friend on the line, Jeff in Gulf Breeze. Good morning, Jeff. Welcome to The Garden Line.
Hey, good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. How's things going?
Man, they're going great. It's a beautiful day. How are things looking in Gulf
Breeze? I love it. Slow.
Why are you
right.
Sitting on the bridge?
It's slow.
You know, it's very this is nothing to do with gardening, but very disappointing to hear that the bridge repairs
right.
are going to be delayed.
I know.
I just feel so bad for those Gulf Breeze businesses, for the commuters, for the citizens of Gulf Breeze and Pensacola who are trying to get over there.
Yes.
Spring breakers are in town, so my
yes.
goodness. Anyway, Jeff, sorry about that, but I just, we feel your pain over there, buddy.
Yes, but do you have a question for Mr. Wiggins?
Yes, I do. The wild azaleas, the ones that are native to this area that have a fragrance.
Yes.
The pink, the white, the pink, the white, the orange.
I was going to say those orange ones are beautiful, yes.
Yes, they are. Transplanting them, what's the deal on that? And mine have no leaves on them, but they are full of bud.
Yeah. You know what I would do, quite frankly, at this point in time? I think I'd go ahead and let them bloom, and then I'd move them after that. And keep in mind that azaleas, be it native azaleas or traditional azaleas, have a very shallow root system compared, say, to a camellia, if you will. And so they're not hard to transplant at all, especially if you live in Gulf Breeze and that's sand. I mean, it's easy to do. But I would amend the soil in the new hole where you're going to transplant them with some Canadian sphagnum peat moss, some organic material, that type of thing. Then go ahead and transplant them, and if you want to do a little pruning back, then fine. But I think I'd enjoy them, let them bloom, and then make my move to another place.
Do I need to cut halfway around before I transplant them?
Get his
say a month or two before, cut halfway around, and then let that new root come out?
I don't think so. That's called root pruning. And we do that sometimes with trees and that type of thing. But I think if you're moving an azalea, no, I don't think you need to do that. Just get as much of that root system as you can. Obviously, what you don't want to do is dig around it and then pull it up. You want to dig it out, pry it out of the ground, if you will. That's the best way to get all those roots, or as many roots as you can on that azalea. So that's the way I'd handle it.
All righty. That's what I'll do. I'm going to enjoy them. I'll move them.
Right, and one more thing, Jeff. As you transplant them, be sure to note where you're going to move them. I would not recommend you move them to a full sun location. They like that filtered sun, and I think they would do better there than that harsh August Gulf Breeze sun. I think that would.
They got to go under the tree.
Now you're talking. Absolutely, that's the way to do it.
That's amazing, Jeff. Thank you so much for calling in. You're a delight. I really appreciate everyone. We have some more calls coming in. We have texts coming in. So let's take a couple before we take a break. Okay, we're going to take a breather here. Maybe stretch a little bit. Okay, Mike. Listen. Here is this just couples right along with Jeff's question. What is a flowering perennial you can use for a partly shaded area of the yard?
Well, I think if your Gerber daisies will take a partially shaded area. They are great. Now, your daylilies prefer the sun. Another great perennial is Lantana, which really is a full sun. Coreopsis is good. I think it'll take a little bit of shade, like some sun, but it'll take a little bit of shade. If you Google perennials for North Florida, you're going to get a list as long as your arm. And that's what I would suggest you do, because there are so many perennials. Now, you got to keep in mind, a lot of perennials are not going to be like your annuals in that they're going to bloom all summer long. They're going to have specific blooming times. And if that's the case, be sure the one you buy or the one you plant is one that you're just going to bloom when you want it to bloom. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Okay.
But there are so many of them. And what we will do, I think it's a great idea. It's a great call. We'll kind of put together a little list of some of the perennials that are really, really good for our area.
Yes.
And we'll bring them next week. That's a good topic to start with next week, because there are so many, and they all seem to have different characteristics. Also, sometimes you have to see something that's listed as a perennial. Quite frankly, with our swings in weather, with extreme heat and extreme cold, not extreme cold, but cold in the mid to late and low 20s, sometimes those plants labeled perennials don't do that good the second year. So they you could call them an annual. So you just have to look at exactly what you're looking for, and I think you can fit a plant in there. But we'll bring that next time. I think
that sounds like a really good idea.
Exactly.
All right. Keep the text coming. I promise you we will get to you. Just stick around. We'll be right back. We're back here on the Garden Line.
And we welcome Trini Lopez.
Yes.
Am I right? Trini Lopez to the show.
This is, I mean, you can't help but be happy when you listen to that song. Even though I don't really drink anymore. I love a good tequila.
Oh, that is a fact. Real quick, we've got folks on the line here we need to chat with.
Yes.
But we've always sort of joked about this insofar as when is the last freeze? Because that is important. It's important for spring gardening in Pensacola. And we've always said there's a stand of pecan trees right to the east of I-110. And when they start putting on new growth, spring growth, the freezes are over. Now, I don't know. That could be an old wives' tale, but it's always fun to kind of consider that. So my question is to our listeners, if you see new growth leaves coming on pecan trees in your neighborhood, let us know.
Yes.
Let us know on the Garden Line, because we will then say, well,
please.
Not for sure, but hopefully the freezes are over. I don't think you're going to see it for a week or so, but once you do, some of us are ready to go.
Oh, yes. So please text us, call us, 437-1620. Save our number. We'd love to hear from you next week if you see. And we have, speaking of see, somebody we love and adore would like to ask us a question. Our girl, Ruthie C.
Ruthie C.
She misses us. We miss you. One day we're going to get her back in here to hang out and have some fun.
I agree.
But she wants to know, what's the best post-emergence for lawns with a variety of weeds?
Well, one of the best post-emergents is Trimec, T-R-I-M-E-C. Now, there's some more around, other labels. But here's the important thing about a post-emergence on grass in Pensacola. Post-emergence, of course, is different from a pre-emergence. Pre-emergence keeps weeds from coming up. Post-emergence kills weeds that are there. And generally, your post-emergence are only for broadleaf weeds, like dollar weed, Virginia buttonweed, Florida pusley, those type of weeds. But here's the key, and here's what I think is very, very important. Right now, our grass is kind of coming out of dormancy. It's not really green yet, partially so, but not really green yet. I think it's too early to use a post-emergence. You want to, because the weeds are starting to come up. Many of the weeds are already there, especially when you see blooms, because whenever you see a bloom on a weed, that classifies it as a broadleaf weed, where your post-emergence might work. But I would rather we not spray our dormant lawns with a post-emergence. I think you can do some damage.
Oh,
so I think we probably need to wait a matter of weeks before we spray the post-emergence for dollar weed, especially on your St. Augustine grass, because it's a wide blade. And, of course, what you're after is those wide leaves like on dollar weed, and those wide leaf grasses like St. Augustine can be damaged if you spray them a little bit early. So I would kind of cool it on the post-emergence, but I think Trimec. Now, the important thing here, one more thing, is that if you go buy a bottle of Trimec or a bottle of weed killer, just read the fine print. And we have preached this sermon so many times. Be sure that it has on that label the type of grass that you've got. In other words, if it doesn't have St. Augustine on the label, don't do it, because it's probably too strong. Because if you look at all those weed killers, many of them are what we call a 2,4-D ingredient. That's a type of chemical. And different strengths are in different products. And sometimes the stronger strengths are like for northern grasses, Bermuda grass, something like that. But in your wide blade grasses like St. Augustine, be sure the words St. Augustine are on that label.
Could it end up killing the grass?
Oh, it could. Oh, there's no question about it.
Okay.
And then, of course, we always say, do your arithmetic. You know, the number of tablespoonfuls per gallon, the number of gallons per square feet.
Mm-hmm.
Do all of that, because if you use too much, you're going to damage it. And if you don't use enough, you're going to waste your money. So, anyway, that's a few comments on post-emergence. And your window for that is probably going to be really April to May. But then when we get into the latter part of May and early part of June, my advice is put them on the shelf.
Right.
Because when we get into the high 80s and 90s, I think it's much too hot.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. That's good to know. And speaking of St. Augustine, one of our listeners would like to know how to lime St. Augustine, or do you water afterwards, and how long before fertilizer should be out and should be added?
Great question. Because
it's a lot of steps for that.
It is
a high maintenance.
it's really not too bad.
Okay,
because
St.
Augustine, let's kind of take it a step back. St. Augustine, no, let's take it even a step further back. Centipede grass, which we're not talking about, likes an acid soil. A low pH, if you will. Lower pH, I should say. And that's great because we have an acid soil in Pensacola, because other things that like an acid soil are azaleas, camellias, mm-hmm. and all of that. So, but St. Augustine likes a more neutral soil, a little higher pH. And to get to that higher pH, you add lime.
Yes.
Lime corrects that situation. So what you need to do is one of two things. Get a soil test through the County Extension Service, and it will tell you what your pH is, and it will tell you when you send in your soil test, they're going to ask what kind of grass do you have. And if it's St. Augustine and your pH is low, it's going to tell you to put lime on it. Now, here's what I would do. A lot of people don't want to mess with that. It's a lot of trouble. So maybe every 2 years, lime your St. Augustine at the rate of about 40 pounds per 1,000 square feet. That's kind of, for a big yard, that's kind of a lot, but that's a good way to do it. And as the texter asked us, yes, water it in.
Mm-hmm.
But always, always put 2 weeks at least between liming and fertilizer, because chemically, don't ask me how, but
right.
chemically, they tie each other up. So put those 2 weeks. Put the lime on if you think you need it. Put the lime on, 40 pounds per 1,000 square feet, water it in, and then don't fertilize it for 2 weeks, or vice versa.
Okay.
But if it's time to fertilize, go ahead and fertilize, then do the lime 2 weeks later. Because what's going to happen, that lime, with that little higher, making that pH a little higher, is going to allow that St. Augustine grass to access the chemicals in the fertilizer and use them. If that pH is too low, it won't do that.
Okay.
So that's kind of why you do it.
And real quick, before we pop into our break, what did you say for the soil test? Where do they go?
Well, it's Escambia County Extension Service.
Okay.
Has one. I saw one on the shelf the other day. Matter of fact, I talked to some folks about it. I think Werner Turf has a service where you send off a soil test. So you might want to look into that. I've got some information on that. I'll try to bring that next week. But there are various ways to do the soil test. But a lot of people say, if I've got St. Augustine and if I really want to do my maintenance the correct way, I'll just lime it every 2 years.
Okay, excellent. We are rocking and rolling here on the Garden Line. Stick around. back here on the Garden Line. We have all the questions coming in, and we promise we're going to get to them this morning. Thank you so much for listening. You're listening to News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Jenna here with Mike Wiggins. And if you do have a question, we still have time left. We are about to check in to the news in just a minute, but please text us or call us 437-1620.
Maybe we should say one thing since we only have a minute or so.
Go for it.
About watering.
Yes.
So many people, including myself, have turned off their sprinkler system. Well, I think it's time to turn it back on. Maybe not watering, obviously, as much as you would in June and July and August, but we've had these, you know, 70-degree days, that, you know, sandy soil. I would recommend watering. Matter of fact, I was going to go after the show, run home and turn mine on and run it today. Then I'm going to probably turn it off again and wait and see. I think they were talking about maybe a little bit of rain this weekend. Hopefully not. Then I may do it again this weekend. So you kind of, this time of year, you have to kind of do it in accordance to what the weather is doing. I mean, if we got cold again and had a bunch of rain, then, you know, then you just leave it off. But I really think at this point in time, it's time to at least get started. And I would certainly water. Check your sprinkler heads. If you don't have a sprinkler system, you have regular sprinklers, check them, be sure they're all working after sitting, you know, by themselves for the winter, and be ready, because obviously watering is the key, and we want to bring our lawns back nice, so don't let them dry out. And the same goes for your container plants. If you're like me, in my backyard, I've got a lot of empty pots because all of my tropicals died.
Oh, I know.
But there are still a few things left, and so those container plants, they dry out so much quicker. So anyway, let's pay attention to water.
Yes.
This week.
Maybe we should stop and drink water while we say hello to Mr. Mark Jacobs. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Good to see you.
Lowering the age requirement for a COVID vaccine, topping our news this half hour. We'll have that story after Fox.
song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin.
We're back here on the Garden Line. A little bit of Rockin' Robin. It's now going to be our theme song.
Oh, I was just going to say, we play that a lot. That might need to be our new theme song, Rockin' Robin.
I feel like we should just play it while we're outside doing our gardening, taking a walk, just walking down the street, just super happy.
There you
Whether
go.
It's sunny or rainy, it's a perfect peppy song, perfect for pep talk.
I totally agree.
And you guys are just so amazing. I love knowing that you all are listening to us. So please continue with your texts. We're going to get to them. I'm going to start with one, 437-1620. And this one kind of circles back to what we were just talking about. So let's tap on this real quick before we move on. Is it too late for pre-emergence weed killer?
It's getting that way. Getting that way. But no, considering the weather we've had, and the temperatures we're going to have this week, I think I would go ahead and do it.
Get it done.
But I wouldn't wait any longer.
Okay.
I would go ahead and do it. Do the pre-emergence. That's fine. But keep in mind, don't use that. We don't like using that weed and feed because the feed part of the weed and feed is, of course, fertilizer. And it's too early for that. And when we catch a break in a minute, I do want to mention a little bit about fertilizing the lawn.
Sure.
But yes, I would go ahead and use that pre-emergence now, but I wouldn't wait too much longer.
Okay, go for it this
remember,
week.
Remember, our ideal time on that is between 15th of February and 1st of March.
Okay.
So we're not too late.
No.
But I would certainly go ahead and do it now.
Right. Okay, here's a good question. Can miniature gardenias take full sun? They're noticing the leaves are turning yellow. Thanks so much for your help. Great
that is
show.
So that's interesting about the gardenias. That is called a gardenia radicans, which is a dwarf gardenia. I don't like putting gardenias, be it the larger growing one, which some people call gardenia mystery. Now, there are a lot of different kinds. But I like those in filtered sun. That's my favorite place for them. But we don't need to get too upset about the yellow leaves on gardenias.
Okay.
Because that's kind of, this is going to sound real scientific. It's kind of what they do.
That is very science. It sounds exactly what I was going to say.
You know, but the yellow leaves, they'll slough those yellow leaves off. But here's what you need to look for in a gardenia. Gardenias are also subject to yellow leaves when they get a problem called chlorosis. Now, here's how you tell that. If you get a gardenia leaf and if you look at it and if it's turned yellow, but the veins in the leaf are still dark green, that is generally a sign of chlorosis, which chlorosis translates into a problem called lack of iron.
Oh.
So just go get a little granular iron or just get some azalea and camellia fertilizer, and look on the label because I think you'll find almost every time if it's a quality product, it contains iron.
Okay.
That will help with that chlorosis situation. So, you need to fertilize them anyway this spring. So go ahead and do that. And I will wager as we get into late spring that the yellow leaf situation will be okay. But I would not plant them in full sun. A little pine tree shade, filtered sun, that type of thing, I think is better.
Excellent. All right. We have some more questions. Let's keep them going. I'm tired of fighting the Indian hawthorn. I feel like I should say it like that. What's another nice hedge I can use?
Isn't that the truth? Remember, we had the caller a couple of weeks ago that asked me to go down to the Community Maritime
Which
Park.
Which they look great down there. I just saw them the other day.
They look great. If you look real close, they have the same problem that I think our person who's texting us has insofar as having that leaf spot.
Right.
Which, in some people, it's worse than others. I've seen a lot of really bad ones and really don't recommend that plant anymore, just like the texture. Now, what do you use instead of that? One thing I like, because remember now, an Indian hawthorn, which is Raphiolyptus to some people, Indian hawthorn is a generally medium-growing, mounding plant. A plant that's going to be a little smaller than that, of course, is a dwarf yaupon, which is a member of the holly family. It's an Ilex vomitoria. Remember that ugly name that it has? That
sounds
is a
like a Harry Potter curse.
But if you're looking for a plant to go into the front of a flower bed, An Ilex vomitoria or a dwarf yaupon is great. And if you buy one, they have little different varieties, kind of real similar. They're all kind of the same. But the one new one I have used lately is called Ilex vomitoria burgundy. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not a red plant. But the new growth on it is a little reddish, and it just has a, you have to look very closely.
Okay.
But it will really, really be a great plant. And it is almost bulletproof. Almost. It loves the full sun. It'll take filtered sun also, and it's a good choice. Now, if you want another plant that I've enjoyed, a little bit taller than that dwarf yaupon, and maybe a little taller, unless you keep it pruned, is Clearia japonica. Clearia japonica is a great hedge plant. Once again, very few problems. It has a bronzish, greenish, bronzish new growth, and will take a fair amount of shade, but will take also the full sun. So Clearia japonica for that little taller plant, dwarf yaupon for the lower plant, I think are good substitutes for that Indian hawthorn, which has problems. It'll be very interesting to see this spring. I think now that I have looked at the Community Maritime Park,
right,
I'm going to kind of follow the
see
progress over there to see if they go downhill or maybe continue to improve.
Right.
So we'll see.
And our friend Paul with Blue Sky Landscaping, he texted us in. He said, first of all, Rockin' Robin is one of his favorite songs. Thank you for playing that.
There
You're
we
welcome.
Go.
Yes. Okay. My inner gardener knew that. All right. Okay. And he just gave a suggestion. He said, I love using, oh my word, let me try this, variegated jazz hands.
Jasmine. Maybe.
Laura Petalum. Laura Petalum.
We have those outside the studio here.
Oh, yeah, that's
the
right.
Red
we
ones.
Talked about
the red
it.
Ones. Those are dwarf Laura Petalum.
And so those are a good substitute.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he's absolutely right.
All right.
And it is a solid red color.
Yeah.
Which gives you a contrast with your green plants. That's a great choice. I totally agree.
Thank you, Paul, so much for that. Appreciate it. And he says it only grows about 4 feet tall and is very stunning. And they look that way.
Exactly.
That's for sure.
Now, a question for Paul. Paul, I need you, if you would please, if you have time in your busy day, to monitor the pecan trees.
Yes.
as you travel all over the two-county region doing all your work. And when you start seeing new growth, let us know, because we're looking for the beginning of spring, for the end of any frost or freezes, and that may be an indicator for us. And I know you get around a lot, and would love to hear from you on that.
That's actually, yeah, to have eyes out there, that's helpful. And Paul's perfect for that. So, Paul, thank you so much. All right, we have a couple more minutes before we're going to take a break. So, Lisa, hi, Lisa from Milton. She said that she did weed prevention to her lawn on Sunday. So how long should she wait to fertilize since it was just done Sunday?
Right, like we said earlier, we need to wait on the fertilizer a little bit. A lot of
till that new growth starts.
Exactly. Till really almost till April, before we fertilize the lawn. And the state people will tell you when your lawn is green, that's when you fertilize it. So it could even be mid to late April. But I think we need to wait. Now, if you did it right now after putting that pre-emergence on there, I think it's a little early. But I don't think you're really going to damage anything. I'm just not sure it's going to do as much good as it would be if you delayed a little bit. So I would wait till we get into April to fertilize the lawn. And maybe before the show, we need to talk about what to use to fertilize in April. Now that we have put the pre-emergence on there already, what are we going to fertilize in April? We'll talk about that.
Yes. And I thank you so much. You guys, you're sending pictures, you're sending encouragement, you're sending questions. Feel free to continue. We have about 15 minutes left in the show, 437-1620. And I want to give a shout out before we hop into our commercial break. Miss Catherine, hi, good morning, Catherine.
How are you?
She texted this amazing picture. I don't know if you have it on your computer, of a store-bought lemon versus a homegrown, and they're Meyer lemons. It's insane. I feel like I need to take up my mother-in-law's offer with planting a Meyer lemon tree in my yard.
Meyer lemons are great trees to plant for our area. A lot of people do, and they will produce.
Sold.
It's a good one. You've got to be very careful with those tropicals, but I mean those citrus trees and that type of thing. But a Meyer lemon is one of our favorites.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that picture, Catherine.
Thanks,
stick around.
I hope you're doing well.
Goodbye, Joe. Me gotta go. Me, oh, my. Me gotta go. Pull the Piro down to buy you. My Yvonne, sweetest one. Me, oh, my.
Okay, okay.
Son of a gun, real heavy.
This is a gift.
Okay.
Louis Prima? Prima? No.
No.
Who?
This is Fats Domino.
Fats? Oh, I didn't recognize it.
Fats Domino.
Because you were going to play the twist.
Oh, we will. We whichever one. Do you want the peppermint
the twist
or the
chubby
record?
Checker? This is Fats Domino.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
I got you.
We are going to. That you just reminded me. We're definitely going to play that for everyone. And welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. Thank you for texting in 437-1620. This is a question. We are really on the lawns. Dan would like to know how often to, what is that, dethatch centipede lawn?
Good question. Great question. There's dethatching and there's dethatching. I would prefer, insofar as removing the thatch from centipede yards, not get a dethatching machine, especially the ones with the vertical knives and that type of thing. I think that can sometimes cause more damage than help. I think if you're going to try to dethatch your centipede, number one, don't scalp it. Whatever you do, don't scalp the lawn in an attempt to get rid of the thatch. Get you a good leaf rake and just give it some elbow grease and just rake it good. Oh. Right now is a good time to do that. And I think you will control the thatch as much as you need to if you do that. Some people do that's called verticutting with the knives. Sometimes you'll put little poke holes in it and all of that, an aerator, if you will. But I'm not sure all that's necessary for centipede in our area. I think a good, stiff leaf rake might work. And I would love Paul from Blue Sky to weigh in on that, too, because I know he probably gets that request all the time. I'd like to know what he does about that.
Well, Dan, thank you for that question.
That's a great question.
You just taught me something new.
Yeah, I personally think you don't need to get a big machine and do that. I think just a good raking will do. But a lot of people will say, okay, I've got thatch, so I'm going to lower that lawnmower down to about 1 or 2 inches, and I'm going to get rid of it. That is probably the absolute worst thing you can do to a St. Augustine centipede yard. You just don't want to do that.
Okay. All right. And so we are bouncing from the lawn to the flower bed, and we're back in the flower bed. Okay. So our friend Tracy would like to know, Mr. Tracy would like to know, he has some amaryllis, and they have never bloomed. So he wants to take them and put them with the ones that have. So should he fertilize them when he moves them?
No, I would not fertilize them when I move them. What I would do, and as you know, amaryllis want that neck to kind of come out of the ground. Sometimes soil, it's kind of like a gerbidae. Sometimes the soil will build up around, say, an amaryllis around that neck, and that needs to be exposed. So that could be one of the problems with the blooming. However, when we're planting new plants, I'm not a big fan of putting a lot of fertilizer in the soil. Some people will put a very low nitrogen, like a 4-12-12, in with their organic material and all of that. I don't think that's really necessary. I think what is necessary is to go ahead and maybe put a little bit of bone meal in there. Bone meal is a great, I'll call it a fertilizer, a soil amendment, if you will, for bulbs. Bulbs really enjoy a product called bone meal. But I wouldn't put any plant fertilizer in them yet. Let them get established, and then maybe late spring, do a little light feeding around them. But I wouldn't do that as I planted them. One of the biggest mistakes a lot of people make, I'm going to go to azaleas, for example, is you plant an azalea, and most people don't do it anymore, but they do some now, or used to. They get a big glob of fertilizer, put it in the bottom of the hole, and put the plant on top of it. That can burn the roots and be the wrong thing to do. So I wouldn't use fertilizer. I would just use some organic material, a little bit of bone meal, and let that be it for now until they get established, then fertilize them. But amaryllis, remember we were talking about perennials a minute ago? Mm-hmm. Is another great perennial for Pensacola, one that is going to come back year after year after year, and you just don't have to do much to it. That is a great choice for a perennial. And when they bloom, sitting up to the big stalks of vibrant color, they are terrific.
Oh, that's... and. I will say we're gonna have a show dedicated to our perennials, but it's not a day lily. I think it's an Easter lily, and I don't know the difference, and you can probably tell me the difference between an Easter lily and a day lily, if there's much of any.
There is a bunch.
Oh, okay. Well, so when my dad passed away almost 4 years ago, at the end of this month, somebody gave me an Easter lily.
Right.
And every year, without fail here, it comes back.
Right. Exactly.
It's so low maintenance. I never even I don't really have to do anything. I mean, I water it and make sure that it's still alive, and it kind of just dies off into the ground. And then about probably 2 weeks ago, I noticed.
Here it comes back.
Yeah.
That's a true perennial. That's exactly right. You know, a lot of churches internally will sell Easter lilies or give Easter lilies to folks, you know, in nursing homes or are people who are homebound, that type of thing. It's a great plant. It really is. It's beautiful at Easter. It's very significant at Easter. And then you can put it in the ground just like you did, Jenna, and enjoy it forever. So it's a neat plant.
It makes me very happy every year to see it.
And
it's just very simple and white, but every year comes right out like pretty much about April 14th, and that's when I see her really take bloom. So
exactly.
it's something, I mean, if you're looking for, and they're all different colors as well. I saw a light pinkish color. There's a yellow.
So if you're going to give a Easter gift, an Easter lily would be a nice thing to do.
Yes.
Wrap it up nicely and give it to somebody who would appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Nice gift.
Absolutely. And then tell them to listen to the Garden Line. Hey, our friend Dan, he also was wondering, does the pull behind mower dethatcher work with the tines? What is that?
Yeah, I think to some extent, yeah. Just have to be careful with it, how you set it, because what you don't want to do is, you know, Centipede and St. Augustine operate on runners. They have runners, and you just don't want to rip those runners out because you can do some damage. I would certainly... you know, experiment.
Okay.
That's the deal.
Okay.
Sometimes it's like a lot of chemicals or even lawn tools. Find an area and experiment and see how it works in your yard to be sure it's not doing damage. And quite honestly, be sure it works. No sense to go into all that effort if it's not really working. So that's what I would suggest.
Perfect. Y'all, thank you so much. Listen, we have a little bit of time left on the Garden Line. Keep those texts coming, 437-1620. show.
Chubby Checker finally showed up. Good
yes.
Attaboy.
Oh, man. You there guys, you what a beautiful morning. A great beginning to our week to be able to spend the garden line with you, Mr. Mike. One last question before we wrap up. Is it too early to plant cherry tomato plants in the garden?
Yes.
Hold off.
Yes. Hold off. A couple of weeks. Let's get this past any frost or freezes. It won't. They're not going to grow very much anyway with these cooler nights. So just kind of wait till, let's do that first week in April, then we'll take our chance then.
Okay.
Because I'm going to do exactly the same thing.
There you go.
I put them in a big pot, and you can pick them and eat them all summer long. They're so much fun.
Love tomatoes in the summer with some salt and pepper.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness. All right. What a great morning. Just remember, listeners, to keep an eye out for those pecan trees, okay? If you see that bloom, you're better than that groundhog. You're letting us know that spring is arriving.
Exactly.
Mike, enjoy your day.
Jenna, great job. Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Stick around. We have Winning with Anna Lee up next.